I'm going to start with this. This will be brief but pleasant. And I wonder if that's something that you say a lot, or do you, if you even remember using that some?
Brief but pleasant?
This is going to be brief but pleasant.
No, have I incorporated that in there somewhere? Well, I'll tell you,
no, but years ago, at least 30, yeah. You played a small show, solo acoustic, at the Biograph Theater here in Richmond. And I don't know, do you even remember that show?
But yeah.
It was a short set, but you started it out with, this is going to be brief but pleasant, or I hope this will be brief but pleasant, you know?
Because was it in conjunction maybe with some kind of a film festival or something like that?
Richmond was starting to, and it's found its footing now years later, but it took a while. It was trying to start a festival similar to maybe South by Southwest.
I see.
You know, and so there were a lot of venues, all sorts of venues around town having different artists. And I forget how you were billed, but probably Palace or Palace Brothers. It was a long time ago. And that theater's long gone. But anyway, I've used that. I hope this will be brief but pleasant myself many times, you know, starting something with people, you know. So, all right. Well, let's get to some things. So quick intro. This is the Haberdasher from WRIR. Having a conversation with Will Oldham, also known as Bonnie Prince Billy, who's playing at the Tin Pan tomorrow night, Monday, December 1st. And we're doing this through Google Meet. And anyway, I want to thank you for reaching out to us.
And thanks for being there to be reached out to.
Yeah. I'm glad you did it. I checked out WXOX's website, and I was wondering, is there a show that you'd recommend checking out from their lineup? Is something you like a lot?
I mean, there are a couple staples that we've listened to for years. One of them is on Thursdays from 4 to 6. And there's an app, which is nice. I don't know if you all have explored the world of they have a player app where you just download WXOX. There's a play button that turns into a pause button, and that's it. There's nothing else on it. Okay. And it's handy rather than having to, you know, navigate your way into a website or something like that. So 4 to 6 on Thursdays, 100 Proof Fountain is amazing. They have guests, like prior to his passing, Michael Hurley was, you know, whenever he came through town, he would be a guest on that show. And that's kind of one of the greater indicators of their, you know, sensibility, if you will, because it's like when you enter into Michael Hurley's world, you know, there are no rules except for Michael's rules. And that's sort of what 100 Proof Fountain is. It's like Captain Scratch and Madam Green are the two DJs, and it's their rules, and it's a joy to listen to them speak to each other and play music. And then they'll frequently have guests. And then on Sunday afternoons today, wow, it's Sunday we're talking, 2 to 4 is something called Flanger Magazine. And that's kind of dipping into the brain of a guy named Ben Zoller. And he, in the past few years, he stopped talking on the radio. He just plays music, some of which are mashups, all super vibey, really great ways of spending your Sunday afternoon just getting into Zoller's world.
Great. So you've done a lot of different things in your varied career. Have you ever done any DJing?
Yeah, I mean, I fantasize about, I've had a show at XOX a couple of different times. Once when they, before they got their low power license, they were just streaming. Uh-huh. And I had a show there for a little while. And then more recently, once they got on the air, but it was, I realized, you know, and it increases my appreciation and my awe for all these DJs, because it takes so much time and so much work. I didn't have, you know, I just felt like I was rushing to put in the time to get a show that I didn't feel 100, you know, I only ended up feeling like 75% about it just because of how much work it was. So for them to be, you know, completely turning me on and stimulating me and my family now for, you know, a decade at least, just is insane. It's so awesome. But I like to guest every once in a while. If somebody's sick and they need to fill in, I can go in with a Crater Records and make something happen.
WRIR has several revolving show hosts. You know, uh-huh. Shows have revolving hosts. Which right. are fun because you get a different beat each time.
Yeah. That's a really good idea.
Yeah, and they're fun shows. There's a end of the century, which is sort of like music with really like an 80s feel, but it can be beyond, you know, recorded in the 80s. And there's a show called Cause and Effect, which is folks choose an artist or a label or a place, and then talk about what influenced the music that's there and then what comes out.
Well.
So there's a few good ones, you know, that are fun, and different people host them all the time.
I know with like quarantine, you know, XOX taught everybody how to broadcast from home. And then everybody pretty much has moved back into the studios, which are nicer than ever. Did y'all do that? Or, you know, have you?
Some people never stopped going in. I took a hiatus and was pre-recording shows. Some people were able to figure out and actually record live from their home. But most people have been back since COVID ended. But learning how to do it, I think, has helped, because it's a lot easier now if, you know, instead of having to find a sub, you might pre-record your show. So it's sort of led to some other things that have helped the station out, I think, in terms of, you know, not have, because, you know, sometimes in a volunteer organization, especially depending on your time slot, sometimes it's tough to find a sub, you know, and
of course.
But radio is so much better when it's live and it's in the station and people can call the number. That's what it's really, where it's most powerful, I think. And I think that we believe that as a station. So
that was my big lobby for years. I would say, do you have the technology for listeners to call in yet? And they were like, we're working on it. That was just a technical thing, though. They hadn't figured it out. But you all do Democracy Now as well. Did I see that?
I think in the same time slot as you guys.
Great.
Yeah. First thing in the morning, you know, 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
It's when we started, and I don't want to get sidetracked on this, but when we started, we piped in a lot more music, a lot more shows that we paid for. And Democracy Now! May be the only one left that we don't produce locally. And that's, again, that's the power of these stations, right? Is that it's local news, local people, local issues, right? And I mean, the rest you can catch anywhere else, right? I mean,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can, what is the rest? I mean, there's not much of the rest, you know?
Mm-hmm. So Purple Bird was recorded in Nashville. And until I really looked into it, and, you know, recorded with some great Nashville musicians, Tim O'Brien, of course. And I love that record. Your records had great reviews. And until I dug in deeper, I was thinking, well, maybe was that your first record you'd gone to Nashville to record? And what was the inspiration for that? I was thinking like a Nashville skyline thing, but you've recorded there before.
Yeah, many times. I've recorded there many times before. First time was at the instigation of former Virginian David Berman, who we were making records here in Kentucky. My younger brother had a studio outside of Louisville and Shelbyville. And then one time I was putting a session together and it wasn't coming together like I felt like it needed to, and remembered that David had spoken really highly about working in Nashville, specifically with a guy named Mark Nevers. And so I called him and started working there like 2003 or something like that. And it was, and I've made probably every other record has probably been a Nashville record since then. It, you know, because of the pool of musical, you know, creative ability down there is kind of unparalleled in terms of at least how I like to see things get fleshed out.
I noticed that you made the What the Brothers Sang record there as well. I love
also
that
also with David Ferguson, the same guy. That one he was more co-producing, and this one he was more absolutely producing, yeah.
So this, I think it's a great record, and I thought it was funny that a couple of records came out that same year with the same. Why the Everly Brothers? Are they really important to you, or?
Yeah, it was. I had made a record with this artist named Dawn McCarthy, who plays as Fawn Fables with her whole family, her two of her three daughters and her husband Nils, and we made a record called The Letting Go, and we'd done some shows together, and just to expand upon our repertoire, when we would play together, we started singing Everly Brothers songs because we loved to sing together. And then she said she started, you know, she bought a thrift store cassette of the Everly Brothers, and her daughters were excited about it. And she said, you know, maybe we should make an Everly Brothers record. And I was such a deep, deep listener to kind of the Everly Brothers full catalog. You know, I said, you know, I don't think you know exactly what you're asking. If you're ready for this, we can do this. And so I started sending her songs, and you know, so there had nothing, it was just, you know, back then, I guess Phil and Don, I think, were both alive when we made that record, I think, or maybe Phil had just passed. But, you know, I would stalk Don Everly's house. Every time I went to Nashville, I would drive by his house, slow, creepy drive by, you know, trying to look in his kitchen windows. One point I left him a CD with a letter, but I never heard from him. So no, it was just, yeah, I know there were a couple Everly's things that happened right then. I don't know why that was.
Maybe they're having a moment. I don't know. Yeah. But
we had a slow boil. Yeah.
That's great. So that sort of leads, this next question is going to kind of lead into tomorrow night's show, but you seemed like a perfect collaborator for a project of brothers music would have been your brother, Ned. And did you consider doing something like that with him or?
I mean, we've sang a lot over the years. Because that Everly's thing came specifically out of my relationship with Dawn and her interest in the Everly's.
Right.
You know, and perhaps, you know, it's really amazes me the feeling that comes from when Ned and I sing together. But, you know, it might have been two brothers doing two brothers. It might be right. More interesting if Ned and I did like the Heart catalog or something like that.
There you go. I'll be looking for that.
Okay, me too. You can produce it if you'd like to.
That's right. So tell me about tomorrow night's show. So are Ned and Jordan like a backing band for you? Do you have a backing band? Are they leading in or?
We're going to be a trio. So I'll be playing with these two gentlemen that I've been playing most with over the past couple of years, a guy named Jacob Duncan, who plays a saxophone and a flute.
Okay.
And he sings John Anderson's parts. And then Thomas Deacon plays these days he plays like a baritone electric guitar and a trumpet sometimes and a clarinet. He can play lots of different things, but that's what he plays. And then I think we'll do some songs with Ned and Jordan as well. Maybe during their set, maybe during our set. And we'll be playing songs from just, you know, the past, whatever, 35 years or something like that. Just we know a lot of songs. And so we write our sets just before each show. So we just pass the notebook around and people add songs and that's what we end up playing. It's been really nice. Our last shows were in Spain and Portugal, maybe last week, something like that. It was pretty darn recent, but I don't, yeah.
How many dates did you do in support of the new record?
I have always just kept playing shows and kept making records. So every show is kind of in support of every record and vice versa. You know, we just started before the record came out, we started bringing in Purple Bird songs to the set and added more and more and more until now we can play I think there's two songs we haven't played for whatever reason, but we may play them. We may play them all tomorrow.
Okay.
It'll just depend on what everybody.
There's never a tour on a record necessarily. That's not how you set it up.
No, I mean, there was a great tour, really fun around this time of year in maybe 98 or 99 when we just put out a singles collection on Drag City called Palace Music, Lost Blues and Other Songs. Ned's band, The Anomenon, with Richmond Knight, Jack Carneal, and Eastern Shore Boys, Jason and R.M. Stiff, and Louisvillian, Willie McLean. They opened, then we did that full singles collection from beginning to end. And then I think we did a Christmas song, maybe Jack and Diane by John Cougar. And that was every night we did the same set, and it was a ball. But that's the only time I can think of where. Oh, and then when I tour like with Bitch and Bajas, because I made a record with Bitch and Bajas called Epic Jammers and Fortunate Little Ditties that were all very specific, technically very specific to that ensemble. So that's what we played.
Okay.
Yeah,
I read the Destroyer Safe and Happy Lives that Jack Carneal wrote about.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, sort of being in your universe and touring. You know, like. What do you think, you know, not just in relation to those guys, but in terms of just artists in general, what's the secret sauce that gets you to make it or not make it? I mean, it's so competitive, so difficult. I mean, you know, what would you say helped you? You know, like what did it for you?
I think that it's, and fortunately, you know, there are maybe two basic kinds of people with this similar compulsion, but I think that it's really a compulsion. It's like, there's not a plan. There's not an alternate plan. There's not another thing that could possibly happen. And there are people who have that same state of mind and may never, you know, but you know that the only thing they could ever do is make music, but they, for some reason, they never find a way of making the connection to with the audience that would sustain them. But it's just, you know, if I'm not thinking about my family or my, you know, physical health, I'm just thinking about music and how it feels and how it works and what its purpose is and how to find people and work with people in more, you know, compelling and surprising ways, I suppose.
Right.
Yeah, it's just there's not another. And so, and every time you see an obstacle, you run into an obstacle and you think like, well, I can keep pushing against this, but the important thing is to continue to participate in making music. So I'm going to just go forget that obstacle, you know, whether it, and that could, that's anything, you know, that's anything. Just not wasting time, not wasting time, not wasting money, not wasting energy on anything other than making music that can have a relationship to an audience and vice versa.
I was in Louisville last summer, and I rode the Louisville Loop or some of it, and
on a bike.
And but we were on our way to do a kind of a Route 66 road trip, and Kentucky was on the way, and so we love Louisville, you know. And I had no idea. I don't drink, so I don't drink bourbon. I'm not really a horse guy, and yet I felt like Louisville is a really cool town. We stayed, I guess, maybe what's the Arts District. You know, the hotel we were in was across the street from a Cuban restaurant that was excellent. And
so you were in Nulu, probably.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
So what would you tell people?
I'm not really a horse person. I'm not, I will drink 5 or 10 drinks of bourbon a year, maybe, or something like that. But I'm not really a whiskey person. And it seems consistently unfortunate that the powers that be in Louisville like to push that as part of, you know, as crucial aspects of Louisville's identity, because as you said, these aren't things that you really give a darn about, and you loved the city because there's, you know, but part of me feels like when I go places like Nashville or I go places like Austin and I see what can happen with the quote unquote success of, you know, urban planning and development, I'm feel extremely fortunate that our city is affordable and manageable and livable in so many ways. And so maybe it's because they keep messing up when they try to identify the character and spirit of the city that keeps the city, you know, wonderful, relatively wonderful for many of us. Yeah, I just love it. Yeah, it's good.
So what would you tell people to go do when they came?
I would make a little list, I would, you know, customize a list to the people, which I do frequently, because I now know people all over the world, and they might say, my daughter is coming to study in Lexington, but she wants to go to Louisville for a weekend. She's a vegetarian and she likes to read, you know, mystery books. Where would you send her? You know, and I would tell her where to go.
There's certain
standards. There's like, you know, we have this beautiful cemetery, Cave Hill Cemetery. There may be a similar age, because I'm sure there are a lot of parallels with Richmond and Louisville. It feels like there are certain basic characteristics that we may have in common, but, you know, and they turn an old railroad bridge that crosses the Ohio River into a walking bridge. And virtually every time I go across that, I think, you know, I should just do this every day, because it's such a escape. It's such a rewarding and nourishing escape. And I always do that as well, especially, you know, at sunset or some beautiful time of the day.
We went on our way out of town, I guess, to, have you been out to Dambo's Giants or the Trolls that they're at?
At Bernheim Forest,
is that where it's called? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. They're incredible.
Yeah. Our father was very involved with. He passed long before the Giants came along, but he was very involved with that forest. So yeah, we've gone down there, and we have a good friend of ours named Claude, is sort of man in charge, chief in charge of play there at Bernheim Forest. So he was very instrumental in creating the various playgrounds there, as well as inviting that giant builder to come. Yeah,
they're awesome. I mean, we've seen him elsewhere. I mean, we're kind of fans of his, you know. I mean, it's just like this, what a crazy thing to do, you know. But it was cool. I had no idea, you know, you sort of don't know they're there. And then all of a sudden we were in a gift shop and someone had some drawings of them. I was like, oh, those are drawings of the trolls. And they're like, yeah, they're right outside of town. I'm like, oh, really? You know, and then we got our way out there, you know. So very cool.
They also do a great, towards the end of summer, they do a festival called Connect. It's a day-long thing, and it mixes science and art and music, and it's day into night, and there's all sorts of tents and performances and walks in the woods, and that's a pretty sweet event to check out sometime.
Cool. I understand that acting was your first love. I've seen Old Joy, and I saw Meatwad, too, years ago. I didn't realize you were in that until I was reading up, you know, getting some background here. But where does acting fit into, like, your whole, like, what you want to keep doing with your life?
I'm kind of excited about it, right? I mean, I learned, you know, once I became, you know, I left my home, for example, and I realized that the music, the movie business wasn't something that I wanted to be, that I could thrive in, just because the way, the nature of the way it works. But I'd still like to do it sometimes. And recently, also, there's all these tax incentives that the state of Kentucky, like other states, are offering to film production companies. And our governor is getting is really active in this and really supportive of it. And I want to be supportive of it too. So I, you know, I've told people in the film community, I say, if someone comes to town and they, you know, they want to put me in any sort, you know, so like I just played a farmer's market manager in a Sarah Silverman movie about a month ago or so, you know, and then I was a cop in a horror movie with Adrian Barbeau this past summer. And then I'll be in another horror movie shooting in January here. So that's very nice. You know, it's great because I love being on set and I love working with other actors, but everybody on set. And this way I can still, you know, be here and be a dad. And, but yeah, I'll have been in three monster movies in 6 months, which is also pretty exciting. Cause I was a big monster movie watcher when I was a kid, listening to The Misfits and then, you know, and Samhain and going right into watching, you know, the craziest monster movies we could possibly watch when we were kids.
Great. So these are just some questions I just ask people that I meet, you know, I'm getting to know for the first time. So tell me, like, I don't need your whole list, but, you know, if you had your desert island discs, like, what are some things on your list?
Let's see if I can look around and get a, oh man. Have you heard that Native North America box?
Is it orange?
Yeah.
I bought Light in the Attic, maybe. I might have bought it from Light in the Attic. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
That's one that's made a huge impact on me musically in the past, you know, 5 or 6 years, whenever it came out. Maybe it's been longer than that now. Might have been 7 or 8 years. And that guides my listening in a lot of ways. Oh, another thing. I don't think you guys are on Radio Garden. Do you know Radio Garden?
I don't.
Radio Garden is a free app. It does have some visual ads, but you can just swipe them away. Where you can listen to different radio station, like all over the world live.
Okay.
So it like presents you with a globe with all these fluorescent green dots and you just go to that dot and that's a live streaming radio station.
Oh, wow.
And I can't imagine it costs anything to be affiliated with, because I know that our station XOX is on there and it's a cool tool. But I listen, like, there's a station out of Window Rock, Arizona that's it plays like 80% country music, 20% Native American, hardcore Native American jams, you know, and that's what I'm like listening to as much as anything is that radio station. Probably one of those, like when Cat Stevens came back and started playing music again around 2000, 2002, maybe, most of the records that he's made since then are as Yusuf or Yusuf Islam, specifically one called The Laughing Apple. That's a record that I listened to and it just continues to, you know, give me new sources of joy and inspiration. We did a song from it called Blackness of the Night with Bill Callahan during the quarantine. We made like this series of 19 singles and one of them was one of those songs, The Blackness of the Night, which we did in collaboration with a woman named Azita out of Chicago. I don't know. Paul Bowles made a bunch of recordings of Moroccan music that I like to listen to a lot. There's a Hawaiian band called the Sons of Hawaii. I think the record I'm thinking of is called Songs of Old Hawaii. I believe it came out in around 1960 or so, and it's got sort of a lava motif on the front. And that's one of the more astonishing records that I
You can't leave behind when you go to your desert island. Okay.
Pretty much. I can't leave it behind when I go to my desert island. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Have you heard Merce Lemon's cover of your I See a Darkness or?
No.
Oh, it's awesome.
I'm going to listen to it.
We saw her last year at Big Ears in Knoxville. I don't know if you've ever been down there, but, and then I saw her recently in New York City and she does a great cover of your record there. You know, I think you'd like it. Check it out. I mean, since you mentioned covering others. So it sounds like from what's making your desert island that maybe these mean nothing to you, but I also always when I'm meeting new people, I want to know if they're a Beatles or a Stones person, you know. Do either of those bands have any meaning to you at all? Or
of course they do, you know, of course they have huge meaning, but it's with this much time, you know, living in the world of making up songs and performing them and listening to them, they're pretty complicated, you know. Like I feel like I can't help but think of overall the Beatles as just a sort of a monolithic corporate machine rather than anything else, you know. At this point, I think, like, if they had any sense of conscience or responsibility, they would start to push other people's music and say, we have enough money and the world has enough Beatles. And if they don't say that, it makes me question the very, you know, the root of that music in the first place. If it came from people who at this point have no awareness that it's enough money and it's enough music, they don't need to repackage it again. It's not only greed, but it also overshadows functioning new musicians who need the airspace. And it's just like, put it away. It's fine. You were great. It's fine. And if they can't do that, then I think that there was something suspect about their motivations to begin with. And similarly with the Rolling Stones, although they, you know, I have much more respect for them because they, you know, tried and failed and succeeded to continue to collaborate and continue to function as an entity. And that takes work, you know. It takes work with your friendships, it takes work with your romantic relationships or your marriages, and it takes work with your musical relationships too. And it's impressive to see, you know, that even if the records maybe aren't as exciting as over the past 25 to 40 years as they were in the previous 20 years or so.
Right.
But there's so much, you know, I mean, the thing is with either band, it's like, you don't have to listen to them. You're going to hear them regardless. You don't have to think about them. They're just like the water company or something like that. They just exist.
Well, I'm kind of glad I asked you that question though, because I liked your answer. It was a good one, you know. Well, all right, but what about, because we're getting into the season, and I happen to be like a big Christmas music fan. How do you feel about holiday music?
Yeah, I kind of love holiday music. I've always loved holiday music. We got a friend here, Brett Ralph, who runs a great record and used bookstore called Surface Noise. Next time you come to town, but he used to do a CD compilation every year called Let Nothing You Dismay. And he did it for, I don't know, a decade. And each year would be 75 minutes worth of the craziest, you know, music, Christmas music he could find, really. And I always found those rewarding. I loved when I was a kid, when the oldies radio stations that I liked to listen to would turn on the Christmas music. And I listened to tons of Christmas music as a kid. I still have a box set, maybe called Christmas Classics, that I ordered off of a 1-800 number from a TV commercial. You know, it's got Andy Williams and Robert Goulet, and it's wonderful.
The classics. Yeah. The
classics. But I love Feliz Navidad, you know. I like to listen to that record. And I think I've got a jazz record, God Rest You Merry Jasmine. The Everlys have a great Christmas record. Merle Haggard has a couple of great Christmas records. Yeah. I like Christmas music.
Yeah, me. Oh, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. So, like I said, I'm kind of new at this interviewing. Did we cover some of the things that you wanted to? I mean.
Oh yeah. No, yeah. I mean, mainly, I just, you know, I'm realizing like that this is something that I could pursue, you know, especially with the help of WXOX here, like talking to, you know, finding community radio stations, and with more advanced planning, maybe even figuring out if there could be a show, you know, to come on and, you know, play live or take.
Absolutely.
That's such a blast. But it's a great time to
connect. Connecting. Yeah. Thank you for that. I mean, we appreciate that. So
it's where, I mean, DJs are, you know, having attempted it to some success and some failure, but it's, you know, it is an art form that I have more and more respect for all the time, especially as you realize, you know, with that the algorithm is not an artist in the way that a DJ is an artist. And the power that comes from just the choices made in the course of an hour, and then in the course of the theme of a show and the thrust of a show over months and years, is artistic expression that, you know, is inspiring and sustaining. And you realize it more and more the more you're subjected to inhuman choices, I suppose.
Yeah, very well said. You know, I mean, you know, our WIR is, you could maybe, if you knew what to look for, find some of it like on Spotify or some street, but it'd be harder to do. I mean, yeah. Why not turn on the radio and, you know, let
yeah.
Some, because I mean, it's my all fa- out my, there.
My favorite shows you know, on the radio station here, 2 out of 3 songs are Shazamable, and 1 out of 3 is not Shazamable that I'm looking for. You know, I'm like, what is that? And I go to look, and the computer, the internet says, you know what? I have no idea. Just listen to the radio. Get off your phone. Just listen. Yeah.
Right. Right. Well, thank you very much. I don't want to keep you any longer because I know you got to get ready to come here to Richmond. We're looking forward to your show tomorrow night, as everybody that's going to be at the you haven't played the Tin Pan before, have you? Or
no, I don't think so. No. I can't wait.
It's a great venue. I think you'll like it. And I hope you get a chance to do something in Richmond while you're here.
Thank you so much, Scott. Oh, I mean, one of my all-time favorite live show memories. I can't remember the venue. We played a little venue in Richmond and the opening band was Quixotic, which was Mira Bilotti and Christina Bilotti out of DC. They were a Discord band. Mira's now in White Magic. So we played the show, and a guy drove up right after the show. We played this tiny place, whatever it was. This was probably around 2002 or so. And a guy pulled up in a limousine after the show. And he's like, I'm here to take you anywhere you want to go. And it was somebody who was a fan who couldn't make the show because he had a shift as a limo driver. So he brought us this limousine, and we just drove around Richmond, you know, until dawn, and then had a little, you know, party in the kitchen. It was great.
It sounds fun.
It was fun.
Good. Well, have a great show tomorrow night. And thanks again for reaching out to WRIR.
See you then, and you know, you've got credit at the merch table.
I love the merch. That's my I bought the merch. So yeah, we look forward to seeing you.
All right, thanks, Scott.
Thanks, Will.
Take it easy.
All right, bye-bye.